Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've decided to join us today. The construction of the five freeways that cut through the heart of Detroit was a destructive and tragic process. Families lost homes, and neighborhoods and communities were split by the six-lane throughways that made suburban economic growth possible. The worst of this happened in black neighborhoods and brown neighborhoods, where residents didn't have the political or economic clout to defend themselves. And that didn't just happen here in Detroit. This is how freeways were created all across the nation. And in each case, it was black and brown and Asian neighborhoods that were targeted for destruction. The good news is that the Biden administration is finally taking an extraordinary step in acknowledging some of this history and thinking of ways to help remove parts of America's highway system to rectify this awful history. In Detroit, for example, the state will use $105 million from the federal government to replace the one-mile stretch of I-375 with a six-lane boulevard that caters to pedestrians and cyclists. The transformation is going to create $50 million worth of land. Now, I-375's construction meant the end for important black neighborhoods and commercial districts. And one of the issues with the idea of recreating or rebuilding the area is, well, who should benefit? Will the descendants of the people who lost their homes and their businesses in this area be restored in some way for those losses? Are they even being heard in this process? And if not, well, how do we prioritize them? How do we have a conversation about something like reparations for those families? Charity Dean is the president and chief executive officer of the Metro Detroit Black Business Alliance, and she recently challenged business and community leaders to consider really bold solutions to address wealth inequality with regard to this I-375 project. She spoke at the Detroit Policy Conference earlier this week, and I have to say, as somebody who has been going to these conferences, I guess for decades now, it was one of the most stirring presentations I've ever seen. We've invited Charity here to make the case for the descendants of families living in Paradise Valley and Black Bottom, the neighborhoods that were destroyed by the construction of I-375, to get money and resources, or at least broader priority in the discussion of this I-375 reconstruction project. Charity, it's really great to have you here in the studio. Welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen. So happy to be here.
So let's start with this presentation you made earlier this week at the Detroit Policy Conference. As I said, it was absolutely moving. I thought you told a great story. You had wonderful information, statistics and things that people probably, especially in that crowd, hadn't seen or heard before. But I want to give you a chance here just to make the same case to our listeners. This is an issue that if you live in Detroit or if you're from that area, you know really well. Yeah. But if you're not, you may not have heard about what happened and what's probably owed to the people it happened to.
Yeah. So, you know, in our country, we have a racial wealth gap. And Detroit is not unique. Most metropolitan areas, you talked about highways, the stories that have happened in Detroit happened in Chicago, they happened in Boston, they happened in New York. But still in 2023, we still have a racial wealth gap. And that gap says that white families and black families with the same education and the same income, the white family is going to have 9 times the wealth of the black family. And we have to understand why that is. And that racial wealth gap comes from generations of intentional policies that have deepened the gap. So when we're talking about wealth, we talk about capital assets, we talk about land. and land ownership. And that is really, really important. And so, you know, the case I made on Tuesday at the policy conference was, how can we as Detroiters who are used to doing impossible things, how can we lead the nation and really taking the step to really do what we can to close the racial wealth gap? The Kellogg Foundation released a report 5 years ago about this racial wealth gap and said that the state of Michigan stands to gain $92 billion if we close it. It was 5 years ago. It's like, where's the urgency, y'all? We got $92 billion at stake. And so my proposal was, how do we take what the Kellogg Foundation is saying, take what's happening downtown Detroit with the District Detroit going through a community benefits process right now with I-375 happening right now. How do we take these opportunities to say, let's leverage these to get a jump start on closing this racial wealth gap?
Yeah.
So, that was the message.
So let's talk specifically about I-375, which has existed for, you know, everybody's lifetime at this point. I mean, nobody really would remember, I think, what was there before. But there were very important areas to the African American community that existed before the freeway.
Yeah, Black Bottom and Paradise Valley. It's interesting, and Jamon Jordan is the expert, right?
So I'm not going to.
He's our city historian, and he can give you much more history than I can. But I remember my grandmother talking about Black Bottom. We have members of our Black Business Alliance whose families were generations of entrepreneurs on Hastings Street, which was the commercial corridor that existed in Black Bottom. And so during this time, you know, this is not a time where Black people can live anywhere. So we have to also understand that historical context, that redlining was very present, and not just redlining. You had restrictive covenants in deeds so that I could not sell this house to a family that was Black. This is all happening at the same time the government is saying, oh, Black Bottom and Paradise Valley, that slum, we're going to remove these folks. And so it's not a removal and then you can go and go move to Rosedale Park. Rosedale Park in the 50s and 60s is all white. And it's going to be very hard for a Black family to integrate. And I told the story of my great-grandmother, who was the second Black family to move into Rosedale Park in 1973.
Yeah.
And her story and the process in doing that included death threats and included all these things in the 70s. So you've got this area where Black people can live and can thrive. And then the United States government, the state of Michigan, and at that time the mayor of Detroit decide this is where we want to have a freeway.
Yeah. And as I said in the open, we have a lot of freeways in the city of Detroit, more than most cities. I mean, if you look at a map of Detroit and compare it to maps of other cities, there was more intentionality in other places to try not to cut the city up into a million pieces. Here, we've got five major freeways that go through the heart of the city. I-375 is important. Those neighborhoods were important. But this happened in neighborhoods all over Detroit, including the neighborhood where I was born, near Livernois and Grand River. I-96 comes through the middle of our neighborhood after I'm born, in fact. It's in 1973 that was completed. And on both sides of the freeway, what you see is this tremendous destruction of community. Neither side ever recovers from that construction. That was an African-American neighborhood by that point when that happened, too. But you can go all over Detroit, really, and point out places where Black neighborhoods, brown neighborhoods used to exist, but now we have freeways.
Yeah. And so it raises the question about what we value, right? What we value.
Who matters.
Yep. And who matters.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm talking with Charity Dean, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Metro Detroit Black Business Alliance. We're talking about this incredible project, really, to try to restore a neighborhood that was destroyed by the construction of I-375 in downtown Detroit. We're talking about what's owed to the people who lived in that area, whose businesses were located in that area before I-375. If we're going to restore that neighborhood, shouldn't we pay attention to the things that were lost, the people who were displaced. What do we owe them? How do we repay them? Charity made a presentation at the Detroit Policy Conference earlier this week, an event that was hosted by the chamber here in Detroit, and made a compelling case that that the people who were the victims of the construction of I-375 ought to be at the center of the conversations about what comes next. They ought to be prioritized in terms of being compensated in some way for what they lost. What do you think about that idea? What do you think should happen with the I-375 project? Who do you think should be prioritized in this major change to not only downtown Detroit, but to the neighborhoods that are just east of I-375 as well? If reparations were going to be made to the descendants of the people who lived there before, how would we do that? How would you like to see that unfold? And what's the role of the state and the city and even the federal government in all of this? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you through social media that way. Charity, before we get to listeners, I want to give you a chance to talk about this idea of centering these folks. As you point out, there are members of your alliance who are descendants. I mean, one of the things I think is kind of frustrating about this conversation I've had with some folks, they'll say, well, how can you go back and find these people who, you know, so many years ago lost these things and try to repay them? The truth is, that's not that long ago in this community. And there are all kinds of families that all of us know who were part of that destruction. But talk about what you imagine when you say that they ought to be prioritized or centered in this conversation. What should be happening that we're not seeing?
Yeah, first things first, when we decide that we want to repair, then that should be a complete sentence. And so then the question is not, well, it'll be very hard to, so therefore we can't. It's like, all right, we're up for the challenge. We want to use and leverage all of our resources to make it happen, right? So we have to approach it from a solution-based approach. There are organizations, Black Bottom Archives is a nonprofit organization that's been around for a while that has information. But, you know, we have to think about, you know, because I've heard some of these things, Stephen. I've heard the, oh, well, it's eminent domain, so they would have gotten just compensation from the government. And so, or, oh, well, a lot of those entrepreneurs were tenants, so therefore, you know, they didn't lose anything. And I think one of the things that we have to understand that what's worse than losing what you already have is losing what you could potentially have.
What
you never had in the first place, and the opportunity that could have come had I stayed here for four more decades. And so that lost opportunity is really, really important. And I think we need to just, you know, not miss that. And there are so many ways that we can be creative as a state, as a city, as a federal government. It's not just on the government, right? It's on everybody, mm-hmm. right? The work of closing the racial wealth gap needs to be on everyone. Everyone has a role to play. And when everyone sees it from that perspective, then the load becomes lighter. And then everyone can say, you know what? Well, I might not be the federal government, but I'm a corporation and I want to be here. I want to be in Black Bottom. So what do I do? What can I contribute if I am, you know, ABC Corporation and, hey, I wanted to have a residential building there? What can I do to help rectify what happened? And so it's a load that could be shared. And absolutely, I'm talking about prioritizing land ownership mm-hmm. for folks that were there. I'm talking about prioritizing business opportunities for people that were there. And oh, yeah, there's going to be cost to business. I'm talking about reduced rents for those that are for Black businesses in 375. And I'm going to say downtown generally, because there are lots of things happening downtown. And this is where a lot of these things that we're talking about, these governmental intentional policies that have created this wealth gap, that has deepened this wealth gap, happen right downtown, right? So I'm talking about a 0% loan fund, mm-hmm. right? To help with getting capital to black-owned businesses because we have an access to capital problem, because we have a racial wealth gap, because historically black folks have not been able to access lending from our financial institutions. I am talking about creating a racial equity fund that says, Kellogg, we read your report. We saw what you said, and we want to do something about it. And we're, even though we're 5 years late, we're going to start today. So there's so many creative things that we can do to make us at least partially whole. I don't think we'll ever be whole, because what you can't take away is the lost years. You can't take away the emotional trauma that happened. You can't take away the feeling of being pushed out of somewhere in a time where I'm not allowed to go any as I please. Yeah. I'm not allowed to move into any neighborhood as I please. You can't take away that. But what we can do is say every single person, every single, whether you are black or white, whether you are rich, poor, whether you are moving into that area, whether you're just like, we all have work to do to get to where we want to go. And if we do that, the load seems a little lighter.
So you said something at the opening of your presentation, and I don't want to, I'm going to butcher it if I try to recreate the phrase, but it was so inspiring. I want you to say that to our listeners about the absurd and the impossible.
Yes. Only one who attempts the absurd can achieve the impossible.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a great way to think about limitations and the limitations we put on ourselves. Yeah. The things that we allow to keep us from dreaming and saying, hey, what if we tried it this way? And I think especially here in Detroit, and especially when it comes to race and reparations, we're terrible about this.
Yes.
We just are not thinking enough about what could be, and we dismiss things really out of hand. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Charity Dean. We are going to get to you, our listeners, on the phones and on social. Susan and Jean in Detroit, David in Royal Oak, Jason in Grosse Pointe, you'll be up first. If you want to join them on the phones, again, give us a call, 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include your comments that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined us today. My guest is Charity Dean. She's president and CEO of the Metro Detroit Black Business Alliance. We're talking about the project that's about to unfold near downtown Detroit soon to essentially fill in I-375, this little spur that comes right into the heart of downtown Detroit, and recreate a neighborhood that was destroyed to make I-375. Charity made a presentation at the Detroit Policy Conference earlier this week where she raised the issue of the families and the businesses who lost so much when I-375 was created. They lost their homes. They lost their businesses. They lost an entire community. What should the process of restoring that neighborhood take into account with regard to those folks? How should we be thinking of prioritizing them as we rebuild a neighborhood? We want to hear from you as well during the conversation. Colin, let us know what you think should happen with this I-375 project. Who do you think should be prioritized? And if you think that we ought to be thinking about reparations for those who were damaged by the construction of I-375, how do you imagine that that unfolds? What does that look like? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. I want to start today with Jason in Grosse Pointe. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Stephen. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I agree with everything that you guys have been saying, Charity, you about reparations. And I wonder if the situation out in California is a good way to model it too. You know, where they just gave back a bunch of land, like oceanfront property in Venice Beach, to some black families who had it taken from them, and then they bought it back from those families. Recently, I just heard for $20 million, something like that.
Wow.
I think that might be a good model to look at. But what angers me about the I-375 project the most is the complete lack of imagination that we're seeing. I mean, we're going to build a 6-lane boulevard on top of what is already a 6-lane highway. Are we serious?
So, Jason, I'm wondering if you have a recording device in my house, because I have been storming around since I saw the drawings of what they want to do on I-375 and saying the exact thing. Why are we building a 6-lane street? We have so many of those. Actually, we have many that are wider in Detroit, and it's I think an impediment to building the kinds of communities that we want. I actually think that ties into the restorative aspect of the project as well. What was there before was a community. It was a walkable community. It was a pretty tight-knit community. I think if you were including the people who were wronged when this was built in the conversation, they would probably say, hey, this doesn't seem very much like what we need or what we would want. But Jason, I really appreciate the call. And I love the allusion to what they're doing in California as well. I think that is an important example of another community trying to deal with this. Charity, I'll give you a chance to respond to Jason, though.
Yeah, I've heard about the beach,
yeah,
in California, and I agree with that. And, you know, how do we make decisions about land that we want to restore if we're not talking to the folks who were displaced? That's my comment to building a 6-lane boulevard on top of a 6-lane highway. We have to decide, do we really want community? Do we really want black neighborhoods, black businesses in community downtown? We really have to answer that question honestly, because that'll help. That's how we make the decisions then. What do we want to see? And if we want to see just 375 a little bit more walkable, that's very different than saying we want to restore what was lost because it's so valuable.
And restore the people,
yes,
who lost it, right?
That's exactly right.
Again, if you did center them in this conversation, I think they would say, I don't want to speak for them, obviously, but I think they would have a really different take on all of this. Jason, really appreciate the call and the insight. Let's go next to Gene in Detroit. Gene, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Stephen. They might want to consider doing what they do downtown in terms of establishing a tax increment finance area, maybe for a limited time, say maybe 20, 25 years, so that the people that are compensated with land there can have a chance to build up resources and get themselves reestablished with the full panoply of tax abatements, tax credits that they use to build up the 7.2 area downtown.
Yeah. So, Gene, you're bumping up against some of my sensibilities here, of course. I mean, I hate the tax credits that we have to give all the time in Detroit to developers in order to help them build their developments. I think it's terrible policy. And I think when you look at the numbers, especially this new proposed tax break for the District of Detroit, I mean, it just suggests that the tax system is broken. And if you've got to give that kind of money to people, something else probably has to change. Mm-hmm. But I think you're absolutely right that if we were going to do this I-375 project in an inclusive way and with the idea toward restoring those who were harmed, tax credits should be on the table as well. And again, Charity, from a business perspective, from an economic perspective, all of those tools that we use all over downtown to try to incentivize or spur development, I think you've got to bring those to the table here too?
Well, you know, so one, our tax system is broken, right? It absolutely yes. is.
I think everybody agrees with that. Yeah. No one's willing to fix it.
Right.
That's the problem.
But yes, and we need to not just do it in 375, and I mean, that's what we're talking about right now. But if we think about all of the ways in which we deploy every single resource and take our brains to the extent of its creativity to figure out ways to get big manufacturing plants here and big developers here, we need to do that for Black businesses generally across the board. 50% of Detroiters are employed by a small business. The Black businesses are, what, 70% of the, 50, I think 60 to 70% of the small businesses in Detroit. They're hiring in the neighborhoods. They contribute to the commercial corridors. And so when you talk about these incentives that we use for the big players, we need to always, I mean, that's the bare minimum, in my opinion. That is the bare minimum for Black businesses. And we're trying to do that with the Metro Detroit Black Business Alliance, teaching about these tax credits and, you know, the tax abatements. But even in 375, I think we do that and, right? We've got to do that and for the folks that, yeah. that we're missing.
Yeah. I mean, one of the other examples I think we can look to locally is what's happening in what they're now calling Paradise Valley in mm-hmm. downtown. Shortly after you were on stage, the mayor was on stage with Dennis Archer Jr., who is a part of that project, and they were talking about all of the things that they've done to try to make sure that African-American-owned businesses get the opportunity there and that they have the ability to make decisions about what is going to happen. They have some agency over the community. I wonder what you think about that we could be borrowing for I-375.
I think, about what's happening in Paradise Valley. The Paradise Valley Project is an example of where you see kind of Black developers coming together, Black development happening. It's been happening for a while. It's probably one of the longest projects that's been happening. So I'd be glad to see some ribbon cuttings and get to moving
the
there.
Openings.
Yes. But again, in a city that is 77% Black, we cannot pick and choose and say, that's going to be our Black corner.
That's a great point.
And so, we'll give Black people agency there. In a city that's 77% Black, we have to really look at who is making decisions, and we have to look at how we're empowering people to make decisions. And then we have to see, do they match the population of the city of Detroit? Because when you don't, what you end up doing is tokenizing, and you say, that's our Black project, or go to Livernois, go to Paradise Valley, and then that's it.
And that's it.
And so if it's not in who you are, if equity is not ingrained in every single thing you do, every single conversation you have, every single policy that you make, then you will find that, that's our Black pocket and we'll do it over here. And so, and then we find ourselves in these issues, that we have now. So that's my comment.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to think about it. I mean, we are talking about a specific area here, I-375 and what's owed to the people there, but this isn't an issue across the city. Yeah. And it's an issue that as you point out, you've got to think about all the time. What's the way to make sure that the city's majority population
yes.
is involved? Again, thanks so much for the call and the comments. Let's go next to David in Royal Oak. David.
Hello.
Hey.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, I just want to point out to the people talking about bottom in Paradise Valley that in the early 1900s, the area along Hastings Street was a Jewish neighborhood, a flourishing Jewish neighborhood. My grandparents, who are from what is now the Ukraine, lived on Hastings Street. So that's the way population demographics work.
Mm-hmm.
A certain ethnicity, religio-ethnic group is in an area for a certain amount of time and then moves on. So when you're talking about restoring that area as Black Valley black out in Paradise Valley, you also have to keep in mind that there was a Jewish neighborhood in the early 1900s flourishing along Hastings Street.
You know, David, that is absolutely important history, and it's important cultural history here in the city of Detroit, the sort of movement of kind of discrete ethnic populations throughout neighborhoods in the city. And there is, of course, this, I guess I would call it a following maybe of black neighborhoods that move into formerly Jewish areas that goes on far into the 20th century. You know, after Black Bottom, it's 12th Street. After 12th Street, it moves over to Dexter and areas like that, and then up into Northwest Detroit, and then into the suburbs. And that is an important part of our cultural history. I would be remiss, though, if I didn't point out that there are significant differences in the ways in which that's unfolded in those communities because of the history of discrimination against African Americans in particular. And that's not to say that Jewish Americans don't face discrimination, but it doesn't unfold in quite the same way. And the disenfranchisement of African Americans, the systematic disenfranchisement of African Americans, has made that look really different in places like Black Bottom. Jewish families moved on from Black Bottom to better opportunities and more prosperity. That did not happen for African Americans. And I think it's a really important charity that we draw those distinctions. It is different in this city, in this state, in this country. If you are African American, it was different historically, and it's different today.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Jamon always talks about it. There was a huge Jewish population, huge French population in Black Bottom, and you're absolutely right. It was a very diverse area, lots of immigrants in the area in the early 1900s. And the question that I would ask is, how did people leave and why?
Right. And that's a difference. I mean, it's always different when it's African Americans. David, really appreciate the call and the information. Let's go to Susan in Detroit. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Just wanted to know if whether the history is still being communicated. And let me give you an example. In the 70s, as I was riding through downtown with friends or whatever, going to and passing 375 and moving on through Lafayette Park, I would say, what was here before? And nobody could ever answer the question.
Yeah.
In 2010, I took a tour of the Mies van der Rohe apartments. And unfortunately, this comment really struck me. It was a college-aged student giving the tour, African-American, and she said, well, these were built because Detroit had a shortage of housing, and they needed more housing, so that's why we have the 1300 Lafayette, et cetera.
Hmm.
2 weeks ago, I'm riding through, you know, up 375 with some friends, and the question was, why are they getting rid of this? What are they going to be doing, putting up more bike lanes and making it a walking space? So people still, I think, need a little more understanding of the history.
Yeah, they absolutely do, Susan. That's a very strange explanation that you were given for Lafayette Park, which is a wonderful area, and is, I think, a good example of a more diverse part of the city than some others. But you know, we're not doing great with making sure everybody knows the history. Charity, you mentioned Jamon Jordan.
Yes.
Earlier, and we should reinvoke his name here. I mean, that's the whole idea, I think, of having a city historian, is that you know, you've got somebody to curate and make sure that people know about this kind of history.
Yeah, and the problem of not remembering history correctly or telling the history correctly is not unique to Detroit. We've got a country that is still struggling with how do we tell the history, our racial history, when it's not popular or when it's uncomfortable. And so, yes, Jamon Jordan is an amazing historian. He does tours, and he's a city historian. Jeanette Pierce is another one from City Institute that does a redlining, racism, segregation, Detroit tour. And so intentionality matters, right? And so I think when we talk about what we need to do, how we need to learn, they're not telling the history. It's on us, too. We've got an obligation to tell the story so that we can tell our children. Right. So that we have an answer next time. So we can tell our children this is what happened. Because, I mean, that's how history started. Right. It's just a storytelling of this. My mom told me, my dad told me. And so I think we all have an obligation to learn what happened, not only so that we can tell our children, but so that we are not doomed to repeat the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Charity, before we have to let you go, I want to give you a chance to talk about what you would love to see happen here in really practical terms. Who needs to do it, and how do we get to a space where this issue is at the center of what we're talking about here?
In the summer of 2020, there was a sense of urgency by government, by corporations, that we are living in a time where we are in racial turmoil that they've never seen before. And that urgency was so deep that there were press conferences and there were statements and there were commitments to say, we don't want to get back here. And so what I would like to see, the urgency of June 2020, July 2020, when it comes to what's happening at 375. I would love to see every single corporation that made a statement about racial equity at the table demanding, because government will move. Look, it's one thing, you know, government can do what government can do, but boy, do we have power to advocate. Boy, do we have a voice. Boy, do we have dollars to advocate for what we want to see. I would love to see the urgency that we had in 2020 around racial healing. To everybody needs to come to the table. Every single, if you have an office downtown Detroit, you should be at the table and you should be calling MDOT and you should be calling the city of Detroit saying, what are we going to do to solve this problem? And how can I help? What can I do? I am ABC Corporation. How can I help? I can start the Racial Equity Fund. You know what? I will contribute to the land. I will contribute to reduced rent. I will contribute. Every single person that made one comment, that made one Facebook post, that made a statement in the summer of 2020 should be at the table right now. Here's the opportunity.
Demanding that this take on a really different tenor.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Charity Dean, President and CEO of the Metro Detroit Black Business Alliance. It's always great to talk to you. It was really wonderful to have you in the studio today. Thanks
Thank you,
so much
Steven.
For joining us. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss a little more history. But with MLK coming up, MLK Day, we're going to talk about the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., what he means to us today, and what he meant to Americans when he was alive. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.